Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba in the Bloom, episode 374, live after the 2027 Meatball Draft, first 15 rounds of the 2027 Meatball DC. We're going to recap our picks, thoughts on the drafts, some interesting picks, crazy picks, good picks, who knows what picks. Try not to be too rough on everybody else that aren't on this show because that's not fair. But we'll get to that much, much more. First, you can find me on Twitter at BDEntric, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom. And my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ, Ryan Bloomfield. How you doing, my friend?
Definitely some bad picks. Definitely some missteps tonight, which we'll get into from yours truly, as well as you. We'll get into those. Hell, I won't even bury the lead. You took Walbert Urania in the 15th round?
Yeah.
Like, you're an idiot, man.
No. So
why are you doing that?
That pick 160? That's totally fine.
Sabotage your entire team just to take a shot at me. So yeah. I can take it. But that was an interesting strategy by you.
It worked right out the gate. We are barely a minute into the show, and you are talking Walbert Urania. So this is perfect.
It worked. You got your mission accomplished. Fun ass night, really fun night. Thanks to Rob DiPietro for organizing it. It's home league vibes. We do this on Zoom every year. This is the fourth or fifth year that we've done it. Went 15 rounds tonight. Maybe 11's a sweet spot, but that's topic for another evening. But awesome time tonight, and man, I know everyone's gonna look at the boards, tomorrow, this week, whatever. There'll be other podcasts about the meatball draft, but it is damn tough in that room with really nothing to look at, and you're just kind of looking at Zoom with 14 other people and making picks. It's not easy. It's not as easy as it looks.
No, it's not, especially when we don't have ADP, we don't have a lot of resources. Everyone has their different ways of doing it. Some guys build sheets, some guys just, print out a couple things. Everyone has their way of going about it, and you got to kind of figure out that there's always a couple of names that get thrown out. You're like, oh, that's right, that guy. Yeah, it happens every year.
Seeing you with the printed out sheets, and especially like you had to hold some of your sheets up to the, I guess it was double sided printing.
I did that to save paper because I'm a man of the environment.
A sight to see on the Zoom there. You could just hear paper shuffling, and we all knew who it was.
It's a sight people have seen with me anytime they watch me do a draft. But I don't make spreadsheets. I don't have things.
What did you print out? Because I couldn't get a good look. What were you looking at?
I printed out midseason gladiator ADP.
Okay.
I printed out the player rater for, I think it was for the full season. But then I also on my computer, I had Player Rater for the first half up, and I also had Main Event ADP up, so I could kind of reference things if I needed to, just out of curiosity. But I didn't want to print out, four sources. And primarily after like the fourth or fifth round, I was basically just going down Gladiator ADP, and if names stood out to me, then I started looking stuff up on my computer. That's kind of where the game went after that.
That's fair. And for those that don't know, the Gladiator ADP is the kind of the mid-year all-star break drafts that the NFBC hosted, which was like seven different drafts. I used a spreadsheet, but I did some type of blend of the all-star break gladiator, the preseason ADP, and then either year-to-date player rater skills. And I kind of grouped those all together and didn't draft off of that, but that gave me at least like a list of guys, right, that I could at least go off of and kind of pick from there. So, and that's kind of at this juncture, that's all you kind of want is some type of like way to level set, like a pool of players that you could pick.
Yep. That's all I cared about. That's why what I printed out was just a reference sheet to make sure I wasn't missing too many names as I went about things. Cause especially, guys are injured, but they'll still be valuable come next season, stuff along those lines. I enjoyed referencing like Main Event ADP and seeing guys that were falling per se, compared to other, just to remind us who's who and what's going on. We'll get to some of those falls because some of them very special in this draft room that the tone was set early and often on some of these. But Ryan, I guess what we'll do is let's talk about our teams first before we talk about kind of takeaways from this. We'll start with you because you're finishing better than me this year. So you can have the floor first. You had the 14th pick in this draft. What was kind of like the game plan back there? And I guess how did it unfold for you?
No real game plan. I did. So I had the 14th pick. So I had picks 14 and 17. There were like 16, 17 bats that I was okay taking. I wasn't sure if I was going to take, like, if a Mizorowski or Skubal fell to me. I was getting nervous. We've got for the folks looking, and the board will be on social media as well as in our Discord tomorrow, but we have it up for on the YouTube for those of you watching. But the first 11 picks were all bats, and so I was quickly debating at 14, like, do I take a Jacob Mizorowski? Do I take a Tariq Skubal? I decided not to. I went J-Ram and Corbin Carroll. Whatever. I'm not going to justify each of these picks here, but bat was kind of the plan. I went at the 3-4 turn. I went Yoan Duran and Gavin Williams, which is kind of a non-Bloomfield pick.
I like the Gavin pick a lot for you.
Yeah, we'll talk about the starting pitcher flow in this draft in a little bit. There were actually more starting pitchers than I thought that went in like the first 2-3 rounds, which was interesting to me. But when you wander in, I wanted to take a closer at 3-4 just because it's a draft and hold and who knows. But went back. Zach Neto, Ivan Herrera were my 5-6 picks. Seiya Suzuki, Shota, because of course, at the 7-8. Took Yandy Diaz and Luis Garcia at the 9-10. Trevor Rogers, Brian Reynolds at the 11-12. Josh Naylor, Casey Mize at the 13-14 turn, and then I rounded it out with a catcher, Yiner Diaz, with the second to last pick in the draft. I had one closer, which was the plan. When we restart this in what, October?
Usually it's like whenever the NFBC goes live is usually when we restart. Yes.
Yeah, so I'll have the second pick, Dom Rello. Our good buddy was drafted next to me at 15. He'll have the first pick when we restart. So I figure I could probably get a decent closer there or anyone else who just fell through the cracks, which we'll probably talk about. But that was generally the plan. Go hitter heavy, probably one closer, and I ended up taking 4 starting pitchers. So 10 hitters, 5 pitchers was generally the move. I'll ask you, since we like to critique ourselves, what was your most surprising pick that I made, or pick that you and or pick that you did not like that I made?
Surprising. I'm not going to pick on round 15. I was surprised Dick Yiner Diaz just because of all the struggles, but maybe that's a value at that point in time. We'll see. I was very surprised, but glad you took Gavin Williams as your ace in theory. He's your SP1.
Yeah.
He's pitched like that of late. It'll come down to something you mentioned earlier. We'll talk about how much pitching went off the board early. And if you would have waited then, it would have been round 5 and 6, and God knows what would have been available to you at that point in time. It would have been pretty rough. So you had to take your chance. And like after Gavin Williams, the pitchers were a closer, Logan Gilbert, a closer that round. So yeah, you kind of had to make that statement. And there was 3, 4, 5, 6 more starters taken in round 5 before it got back to you. So would have been pretty rough, all things considered. So I like that pick quite a bit.
It is, I won't say difficult, but it's weird making picks, and you we'll talk about your team, making picks on players you are setting new mins on, right, with their ADP. Oh, yeah. They've never been picked this high before. And for me, Gavin Williams is one of those, like a early fourth round Gavin Williams. It's like, but I don't know. You made plenty of those picks as well. I'm not criticizing. I'm just saying that in the meatball draft, like this is the first look at 2027, you kind of have to go out on a limb and take some of these guys in rounds they've never really been seen before.
So technically they're all men's right now.
And Max,
two questions for you, two players I want to get your thoughts on. Because one player I was staring at for quite a while. What was your thoughts on taking Zach Neto towards the end of round 5? Just because like the power speed's still there, batting average is dreadful this year. Maybe it's a fluke thing. He's always banged up. Where were you at on the Zach Neto thing? Because shortstop was getting ugly quick. Like I went Jeremy Pena the next round. We'll get to that. But I was watching Neto for a few rounds. I just couldn't do it.
No, I think I made that pick in like 4 seconds. I was pretty happy. I mean, Neto's what, 25? It was second, third round pick, at least before the injury. before the season. And yeah, batting average is down this year, but I don't know. I figure with J-Ram, I know his batting average is down, but in Corbin Carroll, but I feel like I've got a pretty good base there that I could eat some batting average and go with Neto there. So that was actually one of my favorite picks, Neto.
The other question I have for you, and I have this player rostered in 2-15s, and I didn't even know this because they don't have to worry about it until next year. Did anyone else know what Ryan found out on Tuesday evening, that Yandy Diaz has not played first base at all this season and that he'll be util only next year? Did anybody else know that? Because I'm curious. What was your thoughts? I know what happened, but how'd that go? Because I didn't even know. You made the pick. I'm like, sweet. I was legit had him like down as a potential quarter infield option. And I'm like, oh, damn.
Yeah, that's kind of the elephant in the room. I will probably be made fun of for this for a while. The good news is I don't have another UT guy. And honestly, so Kyle Schwarber got taken in the second round as UT only. And this honestly did enter my head, is I don't want to take a UT only guy like as a tiebreaker, just in case there's some weird shit that happens later in the draft and there's somebody who I take who is UT only that I don't know. I did not know Yandy Diaz was UT only. He has not played a single game at first base. So
I was shocked.
That sucked. I'm glad to hear you didn't know that either. Cause
yeah. No, and I have him.
That makes me feel like a little better. Minutes. I don't think much of the room knew at all either.
No.
I thought I was getting a first baseman in Yandy Diaz and at the end of the ninth round, which I still think for Yandy's that's fine.
Oh, it's just fine.
It's UT only in a draft and hold league like that. That does make it a little bit tough. Just tough break. When I saw the not even a tough break, like I didn't even. It's my fault. When I saw the sticker go up, and shout out Ryan Roof who made manually the stickers that we see on the screen tonight and that you'll see on the board throughout. When I saw that blue UT only Yandy Diaz, I was like, "What? That's a mistake." And sure enough. No, it was not. So mistake was on me.
Yeah, last year I remember I took Mikel Garcia thinking I used my second baseman, and little did I realize he was.
I do remember. Yeah, I remember that.
That's why I'm saying it happened to me last year. There's always going to be a few. I actually made a point this year before I picked anybody. I always went to their page to check on their roster ability for this next year just because I did that last year. It stood out to me. But, yeah, Yandy was a clear, like, would never have saw that coming. And shout out to Ryan Roof from RotoWire, does the bullpen work over there. He makes the stickers every year. We drafted 165 players. Or no, more than that. Like it's 150.
225.
Yeah. There's only two players he didn't have. That's the sticker for. So that's really, really impressive to kind of do the rough math on that one. He didn't have Ben Brown and River Ryan. They're both in the last two rounds of the draft. So really good stuff there. Anything else on your odd squad?
No, we don't need to talk about my shit anymore. Let's talk about your team. Just go through your picks and then I will interview me. You.
Gotcha. So I had the 10th pick in the draft because I had the final choice in the draft because I was the worst team. No, I had the second to last choice because we have a new member in the league. So I got the 14th selection, which was pick 10. 15th went to pick 9. Bob Osgood, who joined the crew. So, yeah, at the 10th pick, we got going right out the gate. Pick Jordan Walker, 10th overall. It was an outfield run, and we'll get to that. Like, I was hoping to actually get Tatis there. He went at pick 8. Yep. So a lot of outfielders off the board. Got Jordan Walker, who could go 30-20 this year, and he's still young. We could be seeing a star in the making, I think. Round 2 went Sal Stewart, first base, third base eligible. Another guy that has like 30-20 potential. If he gets clicking, that's one thing we loved in preseason. In the third and fourth rounds, picked up Chase Burns as my SP1, and they got another outfielder in Andy Páez, another power speed asset that hits for average, so kind of building my core that way. In round 5, I was pretty pumped to get Garrett Cole as my SP2. I know it seems odd, but it's one of those that if we were drafting in March and Garrett Cole's healthy, he's not a fifth-round pick. Let's just be real about this. It's a lot of ifs. But Garrett Cole, the last month since July 1st, I was actually writing him up the other day, has been outstanding. Like, really, he's back to being Garrett Cole, so I'm shooting for that. Round 6 and 7, got Jeremy Pena. I needed a shortstop. Talked about that after. It was right after the Zach Neto pick. And round 7, got David Bednar, my closer. Free agent, so hopefully he signs somewhere well, but he's my closer. One of the later good closers this year, it feels like, went off the board. I got my first catcher in round 8 and Liam Hicks. And then I got my boy Zach Geloff in round 9. She could get second base eligibility shortly. So I have second, third, and outfield going into the next year, which I appreciate. And then in rounds 10 and 11, got two more starters in Cy Cavalli, and Shane Boz, two absolute units right now. And then wrapped it up with Ozzy Albies. Kyle Teal is my catcher too. Another guy, if he's healthy in spring, is not going this late in the draft. And then, at least in my opinion, and then I got the magician, Esmerlin Valdez. And then I wrapped it up in round 15 with Walbert Urania. So I have 5 starting pitchers in my first 15 picks and a closer. And before you can ask, that was, I wanted to get aggressive in pitching. Not sure I wanted to go that heavy, but a few things I remember from last year. Yes, there'll be tons of injuries, but that pitching gets really bad, really, really bad quick.
Yes. Yep.
I'd rather take my shots on position players as the draft gets deeper than starting pitchers. So it's one of those like, okay, let's hope these guys stay healthy. But even if like 3 of these guys stay healthy, that's 3 pretty solid arms, I feel like. And you keep going that direction. So I was making a point to get more pitching this year than usual, because I usually wait quite a bit.
Yeah, we'll talk about starting pitching in general in just a little bit, but I took notes on this. I remember texting you, quote, really don't like the SP in pool right now. And that was back in the 6th round. And it got even worse by the 11th round. Domrello, who was in the draft, he said not much pitching left. And yeah, pitching was a struggle after, honestly, for me, like after round 5. But we'll get into that a little bit more. I want to ask you your first 3 of your, well, your first 2 picks were really surprising to me. And really your first 4 picks, Jordan Walker, Sal Stewart, Chase Burns, and Andy Pies. All of those guys, none of them have been taken anywhere near where you took them tonight in their career. Does that give you any pause?
No, I know that it'll be, you know, great conversation for many, but what I liked about it is I and people should know this by watching our show enough, I like to draft to get balance. That's kind of where I go. I want as many 4 to 5 category guys early. And to me, Jordan Walker, like I said, he's a 30-20 guy. He's hitting 280, or he's hitting 290. And I said, even on the, I said on the stream, if it goes 275, 30-20, I'll take that right now. And like, that's what we used to hope Kyle Tucker would be. And here we get it with Jordan Walker. Sal Stewart, I think we haven't even seen the tip of the iceberg with this kid. The power, the speed, the average. That's one thing we liked about him. It was more just like, could he, the playing time, he's 22. Like again, these guys are super young. Have we seen the next level? That's something you and I talk about a lot. Like, I always take the shot where you want to see it to believe it. And that's kind of where I am with Andy Páez, because this is a guy that Páez was a tough one for me. But then, like, I kept looking at it and looking at other people going off the board right now. And it's like, Páez is hitting 274 with 21 homers and 12 steals. Last year at 272 with 27 and 14. Like, we're going to get back-to-back very similar seasons, and that's one of those things. If I can write that down with my early picks, I'm in, and we can build around that. So, in theory, my first 3 hitters are going to hit me 25-plus home runs, hopefully steal me 15-plus bags each, and hit 270 or above. Like, I think that's a building block that I can go with. And 2 of them are outfielders, because outfield gets nasty, as we, even this past year, but it gets platoon-heavy quicker than you think. So, I want to get that locked in as well.
I will hearken back to the meatball draft of last year when you made the famous Junior Caminero pick, and that was the highest Junior Caminero had ever been taken, and turned out that, you know, that turned out to be a fine pick. And for completeness, Junior Caminero went 5th overall tonight to Mike Mager, so that kind of validates your pick there. So again, not critiquing your picks, but it's surprising some of these picks in rounds where you just don't. You're not used to seeing these guys. I mean, PCA went number one overall to Rob DiPietro. Like, so right off the bat, it was just like, okay, this is going to be a little bit different, you know, than what we're used to seeing. And probably to my detriment, but to your benefit, you were much more nimble tonight in terms of adapting to how these guys have looked this season. And yes, I just called you nimble. I don't know how many times
Chico night.
Yeah.
It's under a bridge.
You haven't been as nimble since Vegas, but you were nimble tonight, and that works.
Oh, I do want to comment. You asked about Chase Burns though, and that one was tough for me.
Sure. And yeah, that was actually one of the least surprising moves, that at least of your early picks. But yeah, talk about Chase Burns, because he hasn't been that's new territory for him.
I get worried about him. I get worried about the speed, the pitching. But when we got, like, so you got Miz off the board, Scooble, Sanchez, Schlittler, Yamamoto, Lizardo, Sale, Cease. Burns is kind of the next man up. That's just the reality of the situation. It's a high strikeout guy. It's just a matter of how many innings does he get you. He's at 130, I think is what I saw, 31. So if he gets to like 150 by season's end, that means he should hopefully get you like 175 next year. That gets you 200 Ks.
And now, if he gets you 150 next year, that one of my lessons learned from this year, and it's a lesson learned almost every year that I don't actually learn the following draft season, is just draft really good pitchers. And if they go 150, you know, that 150 of Chase Burns will be just fine.
And Burns' ratios are great. That's kind of something else I was looking at. So as long as the arm doesn't fall off, it's a big if with all these guys, but it was a good building block. It's like we talked about so many times, like when we did our first half recaps, and it was Miz, Schlittler, Burns, like all those guys going together. It's like, let's get our Schlittler together and start realizing these guys are good, like you said, and just take what we can get. So that's kind of, I tried to put my money where my mouth was with Burns on this pick.
Yep. I like it.
Anything else you want to critique with this team?
I really liked your, I'll give you a compliment. How about that? because that Urania pick was just garbage. But and like, dude, you had a smile on your face. I could see you were like winding up for that.
Like, I had it in big letters on my piece of paper.
what are we doing? Really, you took and again, new territory for some of these guys. You took Cade Cavalli in the 10th round.
Love it.
And again, that's at a time where pitching just felt just very tenuous. For some context to that Cade Cavalli pick in the mid 10th round, it was the pick after Mackenzie Gore. Big gap after that, but the next few starting pitchers after Cade Cavalli were Max Meyer, Griffin Jacks, Ian Seymour, Kyle Bradish. And then you came back with Shane Baz, which I really like. So I'd even group your 10th and 11th round picks. Those are your SP3 and 4. Cavalli and Baz in the 10th, 11th. I thought you did pretty well there at a time where pitching was very tough. Like, I took Trevor Rogers after Shane Baz in the 11th round, which, you know, who the hell knows, but I thought you did well with SP3 and 4, which I think that was difficult for a lot of teams tonight, kind of building that mid rotation SP3 through 5.
Yeah, I was pretty happy when those fell to me, and I had Trevor Rogers right after Shane Baz on my list. So if someone would have got to him first, I was going to go Rogers. Also pretty funny, went Bradish, Baz, Ethan Belton, and Rogers. So three Orioles right out the gate, given Rogers is going to be a free agent, thanks to Roof's awesome stickers here. Yep. But Cavalli, I wrote, he's the cover boy for matchups on Wednesday. And looking at his starts, it's been amazing what he's been doing, and the strikeouts are starting to ramp up. He's been lights out, as advertised, and it's amazing what happens. You know, you get healthy and see where it goes. So, yeah, pretty pumped on the pitch. He starts way different than my usual builds. But this is also, I think, playing more 15s with you guys this year. This is kind of in my brain of what needs to happen on these teams to build that balance. So, yeah.
I think you'll finish better than I think you'll improve next year.
Yeah, I'd hope so. It's tough not to, but with the potential injuries that take place in these DCs, never say never.
I know
on these ones, but so you can't get much worse. That's for dang sure. All right, let's get to some of the fun stuff here. I know you took some notes. I took some notes. We'll probably use more of your notes because you're more organized than I am. But let's get to some of these surprise picks, and I'll let you kick it off because I don't have that one on my list. But why was Drake Baldwin a surprise for you?
Surprise does not mean it's a bad pick. It's just something I'm not used to seeing. Drake Baldwin was the first catcher off the board by quite a bit. So Ryan Roof took Drake Baldwin. He was team 4 in the second round, so near the end of the second round. After that, catcher two is Shea Langeliers in the third round. He was the only catcher, and of course this goes right into catcher discussion, but you know,
yep,
got to be on brand.
Not me.
It was Drake Baldwin second round, Shea Langeliers third round, Hunter Goodman. Dom took Hunter Goodman with the first pick of the fourth round. James Anderson followed that up with Samuel Basayo in the fourth round, and then William Contreras went to Steve Weimer in the fourth round. So that was your early landscape at catcher. Just surprising to me that I probably deserved. Drake Baldwin is our new catcher one. I don't know if you're on board with that. You're the catcher man, so I'll let you speak on kind of that first really top five for catcher. I was looking at Shea Langeliers at the end of the third round. Didn't get the opportunity to take him because Bob Osgood took him in that third round. But I don't know. But just Mark Baldwin is surprising because I'm not used to a second round catcher one Drake Baldwin.
Yeah, and it's fair. And I think a lot of people could have – it'll be discussions for the offseason, but it's like Bangaliers, even Dingler, Goodman, they get massive power bumps. But Baldwin gives you batting average with power. He's hitting 276, 20 bombs, and that's with a stint on the IL. So this is the guy that gives you that boost. Like, again, a batting average, you don't get at catcher very often. And I don't see how that'll change with Baldwin anytime soon, especially when he's not catching all the time. He caught a lot this year because Sean Murphy's been hurt. But I guess it was surprising, yes, because I don't think of them that way. I still would initially, I haven't obviously done rankings for 2027, but like I'd still have Langeliers number one. I was kind of circling him, and he got taken a little before I was going to. Dingler's an interesting discussion. Goodman's Goodman. I love the Basayo pick by James Anderson. I was going through my papers. You can see it on the stream probably. And I legit just circled him, and then he goes Samuel Basayo because he was coming. I was like coming back. I'm like, oh, I'll go for him next. No, didn't have that chance. But that goes back to even the preseason when we said we didn't know what to do with Basayo and Allie because they're split time. Well, Basayo's not splitting time anymore, so that's a beautiful thing. But yeah, I made a note. Round four was the catcher run. There's four catchers, and you had six catchers taken by round fours, and it's six very good catchers. So it checks out. It makes sense. You want dominating catchers in these formats. Like you're going to take three or four, but if you can get two studs, it makes a big difference for you going down the way. And I like that run quite a bit.
The last part on catcher, and then we'll move on from catcher talk. We're trying to get some ratings with this one, but that can go by the wayside. There was no catcher in the fifth round. I took Yvonne Herrera, which felt like a little bit of a reach in the sixth. Seventh was Gabriel Moreno, and then eighth was Adley Rutschman and your Liam Hicks. So like,
and Cal Raleigh.
Yes. At the end of the eighth round to Steve Weimer, we will talk about Mr. Weimer here probably next on the sheet. Good God. Yeah. Early catcher to me feels not as deep on the upper end as last season.
No, that's why there's that big gap. Cause I agree with that gap. Herrera, he's got the potential to jump up, but he's kind of stumbled. Gabby's been awesome, but it's like we say every time, got to stay healthy. He hasn't proven that yet. I nearly took Cal Raleigh instead of Liam Hicks. I nearly said I'm going to go for it and take the upside play there. But I was like, I like the balance of my team. Hicks obviously wanted the power that Raleigh could give you, but I believe in Hicks is like at least batting average tool to bring to the table. That's kind of the decide. And plus, Hicks should play a lot because he doesn't just catch. So that was a plus as well for him.
And again, Cal Raleigh went 119 overall. So I know that was one of the bigger names that people were interested in seeing. Where's player X going to go in the meatball draft? Cal Raleigh falls to 119. Would you have taken? So I took Herrera. Would you have taken Raleigh over Herrera?
Probably not. I like Herrera. Like I said, I think Herrera has the potential to enter that upper tier we discussed, like because he can hit for average. And I think it just comes down to playing time with him because I think we thought he'd DH a lot and catch, and it's kind of been a mixed bag in that regard. But I think there is a lot to like with Yvonne Herrera once he maybe gets his footing a little more secured at the big league level.
I did make sure to double check position eligibility on that one before. Yeah, because I knew he was DHing. Yep. So that's fine. Yep. Hell, for all I care, he can DH all he wants next year. But
yep, and anyway. Scott Jinstead just entered the chat and goes, PCA number one. Yep, he went first overall, the big Bobby D. So
that was it. I don't think there's a clear number one. It's interesting. No. PCA, I think I feel like there's a clear top three. I actually think James Anderson getting James Wood at the sixth pick. Like I feel like James Wood's going to enter that top three. I know he's hurt right now, but I don't know. Otani's not the slam dunk number one that we all thought he was.
Yeah. Without running, that's a big conundrum at this point in time. All right. Next surprising pick. Just go to the top.
Let's talk surprising player, surprising owner.
Steve, every single year we laugh in the stream. Like, how did Steve Weimer end up with these guys every single year? And this team, like, I took notes of his first five rounds, but I just stopped because it seemed like every round, here we go. I'll let you have the floor because you took the note. But what are your thoughts on this? Because, again, he's approaching this as, can these guys revert back to their norm? And if they do, my God, he is lined up for some serious success.
Yeah. And before we talk about Steve's team too, I just want to give a shout. Like, this league is absolutely loaded. Like, the first three teams, and Rob DiPietro is running away with the league this season. First three teams in this are Rob DiPietro, Steve Weimer, and Phil Dussault. And again, I want to shade anyone. Team five is Mike Mager, NFBC Hall of Famer. Ryan Roof is in this league. James Anderson, we all know James at RotoWire, along with Roof. Ryan Venancio, Jake Hallisker, Bob Osgood is the newbie. Jenny Butler, drafted next to you. Dan Kenyon, Greg Martin, who's leading the main event. I was, yep. You know, I had the fortune of drafting next to Greg Martin, which, you know, that's fair. Greg's leading the main event, and then Dom Rello as well on the back end. So this league knows what they're doing, and yeah. just want to throw that one out there. But we do not need to give Steve Weimer any more of an advantage.
That's real quick.
And so I think we did.
Real quick, because you mentioned Rob's running away with it this year. Steve won the last 2 years.
Yes.
And he's won, I believe, an overall in DC. He's like, so just wanted to throw that one back at you. But yes, as you continue.
And he has taken, I believe, Shohei Ohtani every year in the meatball. Yes. And that continued tonight. But some of Steve's picks, these were all like surprise. I marked these down as surprising picks, and they all ended up on Weimer's team. So, like, that's not a good thing for the rest of this league. But Weimer took Shohei Ohtani at number two. He got Chris Sale after as SP like six. After So the first few SPs were Mizorowski, Skubal, Christopher Sanchez,
SP seven.
Schittler, Yamamoto, Lizardo, and then Sale. Yeah, SP seven. He got Chris Sale, and then Ronald Acuna fell in this one. And who knows, right? In a DC, like, I wasn't gonna take Acuna just because I value at least perceived health, but a third round Ronald Acuna, like, that's pretty damn sexy. So the league gave him that. Weimer also went fifth round Vladimir Guerrero Jr. That was one of the major guys, obvious fallers down season in 2026. It's, you know, where's this guy going to go in the meatball? We let Steve Weimer get Vlad in the fifth round, which a year ago you'd be like, what? And then we talked about Cal Raleigh, but Cal Raleigh in the eighth round. So, like, Weimer has...
Heck, even Ketel Marte in the seventh, if he's actually...
Ketel Marte in the seventh. Like, that's a good buy low on MIA Marte. Like, literally, the guy has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of his first eight picks were in the top two rounds last season.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
So, you know, who knows how it's going to go, but... And enough blushing over Weimer here, but man, the guy performed tonight, and par for the course for him.
Yep. Yes, he did it again. Congratulations, Steve. Glad we could help. No, I was kidding.
Look forward to competing the rest of the family.
He puts it together, and that's the art of why some of these guys are so great at what they do, is building the team. Like, he takes the chances and builds these teams. That's why we joke about it, because it seems to happen every year. Like, what do you get, a third or a fourth or even a fifth round? Was it Bo Bichette or something the other year when he went off and just, yeah, goofy stuff.
Calculated risks.
Kudos to Weimer on that that haul for him. I had this written down too. On the 2-3 turn, Mr. Bobby D, after getting Pete Crow Armstrong, he went with Jackson Merrill, who everyone's talking about now, one of the hottest hitters in the second half of baseball. Well-deserved. I was wondering if Jackson Merrill was going to go higher than this, but I think people started going pitching, as you see, if you look at the board. But Merrill's a guy that is going to be an interesting discussion point this offseason. But round three, pick one, I made note of this as well. Miguel Vargas has moved up the board. And again, there's no shade on any of these picks because we have no idea. It's more the surprise factor of this guy wasn't even discussed in round three. But I know I had him circled up here. He went early in the Gladiator drafts. He's high on the player raters. Whatever you use to build your player pool, he was up there. So what were your thoughts on Miguel Vargas at 3.1?
Yeah, absolutely surprising to see him at the 2-3 turn, but I totally get it. Vargas, it's just, and again, why it's surprising is Vargas was the 271st hitter taken in main event drafts before the season. the mid-year Gladiator draft, Vargas was the 30th hitter off the board. So Rob D's pick of Vargas wasn't that much of a, I don't even want to say reach, wasn't that much of an increase from All-Star break Gladiator. Obviously the nice thing with Miguel Vargas, first base, third base, 26 years old. Like I totally get the reasoning, and especially when you're on the wheel. And this comment was made by both Rob and Dom. Rob is team one, Dom is team 15. Drafting the wheel in these things is like, even when you know ADP, it's get your guy. When you don't know ADP, it's, you just have to. And so I'm sure Rob D's thinking was Miguel Vargas was not making it back at the 4-5 turn. I highly doubt Miguel Vargas would have. And so that, you know, it was one of those like, whoa, I haven't seen Miguel Vargas go that early ever. But then it's like, that makes sense to me.
Yeah, I get it. And it kind of, the like reason for me that I get it is I talked about why I took some of my picks is you want kind of that, floor is what you, with Vargas, but you know what you're getting with Vargas. And again, he's also still young. Like there could be more. And that's kind of what you're looking to me. A lot of these picks for an August 18th evening for a 2027 season that we hope is at least close to a full season still is, to me, it's a floor with upside picks is where I'm trying to go as much as possible. And Miguel Vargas is a floor with upside pick to me. So yeah. I get there's some maybe swing and miss in his game, but that's been improved. So I think it's a really good pick. And it's one of those that if he has a monster September, that's the fun of this. Guys can have a great September or a bad September, and this whole board looks goofy. And Vargas could easily be a guy that creeps up even more because first base, it's deeper this year. We'll get to that going. Third base still sucks. Still sucks. So, like, that enhances this as well. So, yeah. No shade at all. I want to add one real quick to you because I'll save my starting pitcher early comments to a more general topic a little later on. But a pick I literally was – I didn't do a whole lot of research. We talked about this. I've been busy. I'm not a freaking spreadsheet guy, all that kind of stuff. But I wanted to get Connor Griffin with my second pick of the draft. That was what I wanted to do. And Don Rello, you sneaky, sneaky guy, you, he picked him at the first pick of round two. And I think this is a guy that, again, if he comes back in September and shows he's healthy, Connor Griffin to me could be a first-round draft pick this next year. Because this is a guy that legit has 20 to 30 home runs and 50-plus steals that he can hit for average. Like, Connor Griffin, if he's healthy, I take him over Ellie De La Cruz in my brain. So I was very, very much hoping for him to fall.
That one was surprising to me, though. We had some discussion in the Discord, like, you know, leading up to the meatball draft. Is Connor Griffin going to go in the first round? And at first, I was like, he wasn't. When I said I made my, like, list of top 16, 17 hitters that I'd be fine with in the first two rounds, with my first two picks, Connor Griffin was not on that list. And I know Dom is in the chat at the moment. I would not have taken Griffin there. But I am certainly not the bastion of wisdom here with the
Your youths. Favorite player just got called up by the Red Sox, so don't worry about it. The olds.
Yeah, olds just got called up. But like you said, you would have taken Connor Griffin, and in our Discord, Connor Griffin was, I don't want to say unanimous, but there was discussion on what do we do with first round Connor Griffin. A little bit is that this is probably a fault of mine when we're doing the meatball draft, the out of sight, out of mind. There were a lot of guys that were picked that were currently on the IL, and maybe that factored in. But get used to Connor Griffin being a wheel pick. And I think Dom is, I want to say, setting the market there, but like, people are going to look at this board and they're going to see Connor Griffin at that 1-2 wheel and be like, that kind of makes sense. And so at first it's like, that's interesting. And the more it's kind of sinks in, it's like, I get it. And again, Dom's not going to get Connor Griffin coming back at the 3-4. So makes sense.
All right. And then I have one more pick that goes before your round five pick you want to discuss here. So one that also stood out to me quite a bit, and I was, God, James, again, sharp room. So I got kind of mad a lot throughout the draft, and a lot of us did. It felt like you heard like group
no,
picks,
no,
you,
there were no table pounds, at least that I saw.
That's not worth it.
No pen throws, no nothing.
The way I look at it, when someone says good pick, they were looking at that person or had that kind of in the system. So there was a lot of that going on. For me, it was round three, pick six to one, James Anderson and Kevin McGonigal. That one I was really hoping got back to me. I was going to add him to Jordan Walker and Sal Stewart and have that start of power, speed, more speed with McGonigal than power, but great batting average. more importantly, the flexibility he brings to your lineup as well. Because like we mentioned earlier with Neto, you took Neto, I took Pena. Shortstop gets rough as the draft goes along. So if I can get a Kevin McGonigal, another youth that I think could find the next step. The reason I want to point it out is we found out, Griffin's ADP for now. We got McGonigal's ADP for now. There'll be other guys we'll talk about. But a lot of these guys that were speculative prospects this last draft season that are producing, now we're getting a feel of who they are. McGonigal stood out to me in this one.
And that's one of the like annual meatball traditions that I have my on is James Anderson always takes, these young guys at prices we haven't seen before. We saw that tonight, right? Well, last year, I think it was Zach Neto in the second round. I could be wrong. I believe that's correct. And tonight for James Anderson, it was James Wood in the first round, pick six, which, totally. But round three, Kevin McGonigal. Round four, Samuel Basayo. And round five, Peyton Toley. You're seeing these young guys who James obviously knows extremely well getting taken in draft and holds now at prices we haven't seen before. And that's always something I take note of. Peyton Toley was one that was a surprising pick to me. Again, surprising doesn't mean bad. I totally get it. We even had discussion in the Discord on Peyton Toley. It was like, how high does he go? Turns out James took him in the fifth round as SP15. Right after Zach Wheeler, Drew Rasmussen, and right before your Garrett Cole and Paul Skeens, who I really want to talk about.
We will.
He was one of, and we'll talk about Skeens, but Toley was, Toley in the fifth as SP15, and I'll throw it back to you here. He was one of kind of three surprising starting pitcher picks in a row. This one will get picks for clicks, which was a running joke through the Zoom. Phil Dussault took Cade Anderson in the sixth round. So I'm sure everyone will hone in on that one. Cade Anderson in the late sixth round to Phil Dussault. And then in the eighth round, Garrett Crochet, Dan Kenyon took Garrett Crochet, who I honestly like was not even on my board. Not because I didn't want to draft him. I wasn't drafted in the mid-year Gladiator and wasn't there, but eighth round Garrett Crochet. Those three picks kind of stood out to me as like, all right, this is the price. Toley in the fifth, Cade Anderson in the sixth, and Crochet in the eighth. I don't know if those stuck out to you, have any thoughts on those three, but those ones stuck out to me.
Yeah, the Toley pick, I was going through my papers and I heard James say that over the Zoom. I was like, oh, man, because I was thinking, like, I had Cole kind of queued up for this round, but I was thinking, okay, I can get Toley as like my SP3. I thought I had like a couple rounds to go there. Not the case, and rightfully so. Like, if you're believing the second half we're seeing from Toley is what we're going to see going forward into 2027, well, he's the potential ace of the Red Sox. Like, we're going to talk about Crochet in a second, but Toley's been that good. Strikeouts have been up. He's limited damage. Lots to like there. Cade Anderson, picks for clicks, but it could be great. We know the skills are there. The Mariners will have to mess around with the rotation. He should. Like, if he's not starting in that rotation next year, something's really wrong in Seattle. But it's a nice upside play. I get it. And then Crochet is the wild card, but it could be a wild card that pays off if it's one of those. He's rehabbing, didn't have surgery. If we see him pitching September, even if it's out of the bullpen, he ramps back up. Maybe he turns into that Crochet from a couple years ago in Chicago, where his first time in the rotation, he still got 140 innings or whatever. Like, that could be a really nice eighth round pick. So it's a risky one, but honestly, the Crochet is probably just as risky as Cade Anderson, because we don't know much about Cade Anderson at the big league level at all. Not saying he's not going to be good, but what are we going to get is the question. So very interesting between the three of those, but the Toley one, again, these ADPs might not mean anything. They might be massive outliers one way or the other by the end of draft season. But that was an eye opener to be like, oh, okay, if I want Peyton Toley, who to me is an SP2, and he was for him, for James. James had Yamamoto. So he has his SP2. That's still, to me, I'm like, okay, for a guy that likes to wait on starting pitching, can't really do that.
Speaking of massive outliers, and we'll go there now. We'll go to that conversation. I remember I made this comment about Paul Skeens. It was getting uncomfortable. Skeens lasting until the
we all joked about it after every pitcher went off the board.
Exactly. It was like mid fifth round. Paul Skeens still available. I remember I made the comment: whoever takes Skeens, it's either going to be a max or a min, right? In the fifth round for Skeens, like he's either some type of injury is coming up, given the velocity drop, or Skeens, right, turns things around and you get a first round pick. Paul Skeens went in the fifth round to Jenny Butler. I was going to take Paul Skeens in the fifth. I did not think about him at the 3-4 turn, but there's a certain point where it's like, okay, this is a 15 team league. This league has like legit NFBC Hall of Famers in the damn thing. You got to take a couple shots. And I was ready to take that shot on Paul Skeens in the fifth. I didn't get the opportunity to do so.
I think Greg Martin even said he would too. Greg or Dom, one of the two.
In the fifth round, like,
yeah.
Again, that's an early pick. You need that pick, but I was ready to be like, okay, I'm gonna take the shot on a first round pitcher in the fifth. Skeens was taking the pick after you. You took Gerrit Cole, so obviously you weren't considering Skeens.
Nope.
But like, what do you think of that pick? What do you think? It's just so hard. In the, like, we are literally if people are listening to this a week from now, whatever, since we're recording this on August 18th is when the draft took place. Where we're currently at with Paul Skeens is his next start has been pushed back. He has not thrown that next pushed back start. So there's just so much.
Wednesday the 19th.
He's pitching on Wednesday the 19th. So we'll see. Maybe his arm falls off on the 19th. Maybe he shoves. I just thought that was a time where it's like, yeah, I'm ready to take the plunge. And Jenny did so. And I applaud Jenny for doing so.
It's like you said, you got to take your chances. It's a boom or bust play. I was trying to stick with, like I talked about when I talked about my team, like take my chances with like more youth and maybe the problems out there. And I took plenty of chances. Like Gerrit Cole still isn't the freaking, he had surgery, he's coming back, but none of that's safe. You never know. None of, like Burns throws gas. We know how the story usually ends. Like, so like anything's possible with these pitchers. Skeens is just showing the problems right now, which is scary. But like you said, as if maybe there's something that gets tweaked and he turns back into Paul Skeens. And this is an absolute gift that just took place here. And Jenny's done this in the past with certain pitchers. I can't remember if it was, she took Cole Reagans and somebody else later than usual. And they both panned out the one year she did it. And like she's got a tendency to take advantage of these situations. And like you said, you have to do it and see where it happens. Like Michael in the chat says, Snell, Henderson, Harris, and Cade were all just after and also have questions. Yeah, there was a ton of greed that came off the board. Like, I thought Snell was a great pick to Greg Martin later on when he went. I know we're not talking about that. But
well, he was two picks after Skeens. So, I mean, it's right. Cole, there was a three-pick stretch. Hell, fourth pick, it was Kyle Tucker. But Gerrit Cole, Paul Skeens, Kyle Tucker, Blake Snell, all in the end of the fifth round.
So what I named round five, and I wrote it down here, so I'll kind of weave this in. Sure. I called round five the land of forgotten toys. Because Zach Wheeler kicked things off. He's not a fifth-round pick. You got Vladito, Byron Buxton, who's been better but fine. We got some nice young players. Trey Turner in round five. Gerrit Cole's moving up. But Skeens, Tucker, Snell, Neto. Like, at least a third to half of this round, we're not even close to fifth-round picks, like, recently. So I call it the land of forgotten toys that all just got, okay, everyone wants to take their chances now in round five.
Yeah, fifth round was Brian Baker. Dom took Brian Baker at the end of the fifth round. Again, not a bad pick. Brian Baker's been freaking awesome, but it's another one. It's like, whoa, not used to that.
Not used to that at all. You wanted, because some of my notes go with some of the stuff you have farther down the sheet here, so I will wait. But you want to talk about Phil's heavy pitching approach. And I'm not surprised by this at all from drafting with him in Vegas, from watching his other drafts in Vegas. This is Phil 101 from being in a league with him and just even watching his fab. He pounds the living crap out of starting pitching. He goes and maximizes pitching. Obviously, you can't fab pitching in these DCs, Ryan. So, yeah, I'll let you take the floor because you had the note on this. But Phil, in the first eight rounds, had six pitchers.
Yep, six pitchers in the first eight rounds. Just something that I obviously took a note of in terms of like the prevailing. This is the ultimate zig when everyone else is zagging or whatever. Zig when whatever the hell, whatever the saying. We all know I'm terrible at sayings, and I just butchered another one. But the prevailing wisdom in this draft is because we are drafting so early. There are still 6 weeks left of the season, 5-6 weeks left of the season. Is that pitching you want to even push back even further, and there's absolutely an opportunity there to say, screw that. I'm just going to pile up on pitching and take values. And that's what Phil did. Six of the first eight. I think the big thing, that kind of the linchpin to the strategy, is Phil took Bobby Witt with the third pick. Yep. But then followed that up with Jesus Luzardo in the second round, Dylan Cease. So it was your SP one and two. He took Munoz at the end of the fourth round, got his closer. We talked about Cade Anderson at the end of the sixth, and then went Nolan McLean in the seventh, Trevor McGill in the eighth. So by far the heaviest pitcher build. Dan Kenyon, team 12, took six pitchers in the first nine. So you do have that, but that was just an interesting strategy where it's like, yeah, that makes sense. If everyone else is kind of going to push back pitching a little bit, why not lean into it and go for it? And that's what Phil did.
Yeah, and I'll give a shout to Dan Kenyon, because he went Mason Miller rounds one and two.
Yeah, only team to go two pitchers to start.
That was big. And but then he took Olson, Dingler, and Tucker. Like Olson, Dingler, and then if Tucker bounces back, it's huge. But then he backed up his pitching. Like Logan Webb coming off a down year in round six is later than usual. Parker Messick's a beast. If Crochet pans out, then Riley O'Brien is his potential second closer. Like, there's a lot to like there. And even with his round 15 pick, he took Daniel Palencia, who knows? He could be the closer again in 2027 for the Cubs. So really quietly productive. I didn't really pay attention to it until you mentioned right there that's a heck of a starting, like, pitching situation there. So really cool stuff.
Yep.
All right. As we move along here, you got a couple more picks that surprised you?
Both relievers and more just like, is this guy even going to get taken? Edwin Diaz, right? So the context here is, and these are both relievers. So is Edwin Diaz in the 11th round and Felix Bautista in the 14th round, which has some ironic yes. comedy to it, because Ryan Roof is the one who took Felix Bautista in the 14th round. And again, hearkening back to, this feels like a home league. We were all busting Roof's chops for his pick, what, 2-3 years ago of Felix Bautista before he underwent, what was it, elbow surgery, shoulder surgery, whatever it was. But so Roof went back to the well with Felix Bautista at the end of the 14th, which actually makes
that's a really nice pick
a ton of sense, because if Felix Bautista is healthy this offseason, like,
well, he's heading out on a rehab assignment this weekend. They expect him to pitch in September.
Yeah, like that could be really nice, and to the point where, like, you may not see a Felix Bautista in the anywhere near the 14th round come real draft season. So that was a great pick. And again, as you get closer to the end of this meatball draft, you see teams kind of just, you know, that's your spec round, right? That's when you want to throw a dart, because it's not the last round of the draft, but it's kind of the last round of the first phase. So I thought Bautista worked. And then, yeah, Edwin Diaz, Mike Mager took Edwin Diaz in the 11th round. And, you know, who am I to critique anything Mike Mager does? If Edwin Diaz, if this is just kind of a get right IL stint, and they're sure as hell paying Edwin Diaz, if he comes back as the Dodgers closer end of this season or next season, like, Edwin Diaz will go nowhere near the 11th round in drafts next year.
Yeah. People had Edwin Diaz anywhere from the first to third reliever off the board this last year. And if he does get right and get healthy by the beginning of next season, they paid him to be the closer of the Dodgers, the best team in baseball. So I totally get that gamble in round 11, like you're talking about it. Like, when it came off the board, I was like, huh. But then you sit back into your, we just discussed it out loud that, yeah, makes a ton of sense to take that risk in round 11.
So that's the thing you need to take. And that's one of the difficult things with this draft, is you need to take a step back from where we are currently at, like this week with news, and think about what this is going to look like in October and November.
Like, we joke about it. We joke about it every year. Like, when one of our guys hits a home run tomorrow, it's like, yeah. Oh, wait, we don't get any of those stats.
Doesn't count.
None of those stats matter.
Exactly. Like I am, yeah, actively rooting for these guys now. Like, I want J-Ram to show he's not broken. Yeah. But
I got Cardinals, Reds, and Great American Small Park tomorrow. I can't wait.
You're ready to go.
See what goes on.
You took Jordan Walker and Sal Stewart for that eight-game week. Yeah. Eight-game week this week.
I'm taking advantage of this stuff, boys.
That's right.
Yeah, it ain't going to matter at all. Not going to matter. But all right, let's talk about some positions, though, because I had a couple notes on these. And you mentioned first, we'll start with this, that more pitching than you thought would go in the first three rounds. So I'll let you start it with that, because then I have a couple nuggets to go with there.
Yeah, and maybe even first three, four rounds.
Rounds, because that's where my nuggets take place.
Okay. So I thought, again, off the bat, the first 11 picks were all bats. And I was like, oh man, this room is extremely cold on pitching. Dan Kenyon took Jacob Mizorowski in the first round. He was the only first rounder picked. I had the opportunity to take Tarik Skubal coming off the wheel. I opted for Corbin Carroll instead, but Skubal was available to me in the second round. I could, could be regretful. But the second, third, and fourth rounds, there were a lot of pitchers taken. So if I'm just going to rattle down names of starting pitchers, so it was Miz in the first. Second round was Skubal, Christopher Sanchez. This is in order. Cam Schlittler, Yamamoto, Jesus Luzardo, Chris Sale. Third round was Dylan Cease, Chase Burns, Yuri Perez. Fourth round was Gavin Williams, Logan Gilbert. The closers in those first four rounds, and there are a lot. Mason Miller first. He was the only closer in the second round. Cade Smith, the one of two closers in the third round with my Yoan Duran. The fourth round closers were Louis Varland, Josh Hader, and Andres Munoz. So, we were a little shy in the first round taking pitchers, but that did not last very long. Pitchers were wasn't like a kind of your vintage typical NFBC main event. But it was more pitchers than I thought, at least in the first four rounds.
Yeah, it really surprised me. We kind of talked about when I was putting my team together and you were talking about how things dried up. I made a couple surprising notes like, okay, so Miz is the number one now. We're cool with that. But some things that stood out to me, Cam Schlittler was number four off the board. So he's moved up. Yep. Remember, he was in the Burns, Schlittler, Miz. Those three guys all went in the first three rounds. So that has changed quite a bit on this one. And then, like, Jesus Luzardo is now up to the SP6. He's made quite the jump where in last draft season, he was, like, on the outside. Like, he was, like, a $22, $23 player, which is, around 3, 4, 5, somewhere in there. So he's moved up. Chris Sale's doing his thing. But we saw some, like, Yuri Perez is back up in the mix now. So he's a name you got to remember as you're looking at this. And then you took Gavin Williams early in round four, and I don't think that's wrong. I think it's very interesting, but it's just like Williams, Yuri Perez, I guess you could say Burns, Schlittler, they've all taken massive jumps so far. And again, this is just one draft, so I can't say that it's going to stay this way, but did stand out quite a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Ryan Roof mentioned this in the chat, and it's all perception. He said, last season, the first five rounds, 18 starting pitchers were taken. This year, it was 20. So just a slight increase, but I need to look back at the last year results. But you pepper all those starting pitchers with all the relief pitchers in those first five rounds. The fifth round was massive pitching. It was Wheeler, Rasmussen, Tolley, Chapman, Cole, Skeen, Snell, half the fifth round was pitching as well. So, I didn't quite expect that, especially after how cold we were on pitching in the first round.
And like you said, it's also with the ramp up of RPs that got taken early, because it wasn't just 20 starting pitchers. There was also, let's look at it, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Six closers taken in the first five rounds. 26 pitchers in the first five rounds. Last year, closers didn't go so early, and I'm kind of surprised this year, because last year we had the mindset, it's not for an overall, so what are we doing? That didn't stop people this year, and I wonder if that's a factor of the landscape of closing going on right now, but they got pushed back up, where last year it felt like they kind of got pushed down a little bit.
Another thing on the closing market, and this is why I liked your David Bednar pick in the seventh round. So Bednar was RP11 in this draft. There was a massive cliff after David Bednar. And I think Bednar will go earlier than the seventh round. Yes, he's going to be a free agent, but I think, Yankees probably re-sign. And wherever David Bednar signs, I think there's a pretty good bet he's going to sign as a closer. So the free agent, like, quote unquote, risk for me with Bednar wasn't really there. I mean, I texted you that during the draft. But after David Bednar, I don't think there was another closer. Let's see. McGill went in the late eighth round. Jacob Latz in the ninth, and Riley O'Brien in the ninth. Nobody in the 10th. Ben Joyce in the 11th. Edwin Diaz in the 11th that we talked about earlier. So felt like there was a little bit of a closer cliff after David Bednar. And I think if you're in a snake draft, it feels good to get that last closer before a cliff.
Yeah, no, I'm hoping he does sign somewhere nice, because he's been awesome for me this year. And Hope the big man continues to do it this upcoming season. You literally almost wrote word for word here on the next one that I want to discuss. You said deep versus shallow hitting pockets, and you wrote power first base in round three. I put literally power first base R3 on my sheet. So that's scary that it was word for word, because it stood out to me in such a big way. Like, we know first base is much deeper this year, but it's kind of like levels, like we've talked about with shortstop in the past and other positions. Like, there's the elite tier and then there's this other tier. And so, like, Sal Stewart, I took, he could be first base or third base in round two. Nick Kurtz went in round three, but it went Kurtz, Ben Rice, Pete Alonso, Matt Olson between pick 4 and pick 12 of round three. So literally it was, okay, Stewart went one round earlier, and then boom, Kurtz, Rice, Alonso, Olson, all 30 plus home run bats. If you want to throw in Murakami, went late round four, that's another probably 30 home run bat if you want to get weird about it. So if you want the power at first base, because it does drop off, it goes Harper, who knows who Vladdy is, Wilson Contreras, and then a big drop up after that. So yeah, your tiers of first base, you can almost see it just looking at colors, let alone analyzing it. It's the big dogs, some guys that could be either or, and then a big drop off to the next level, which is still a good level, but a different level, all things considered.
And I thought Nick Kurtz was one of the major steals of the early
draft. I almost took him instead of Stal Stewart.
Yeah, I was actually going to, and it sounds bad to, like, hey, would you rather have, if you had to do it again? But, like,
I wanted the speed.
Yeah, no, I get it. And that fits that. Hey, that fits with your goal of balance, and Nick Kurtz is not balanced. But I just thought, just from a, like, pure value in a vacuum standpoint, I don't think we're going to see a Nick Kurtz. Like, you're drafting, yes, he's injured on the IL right now, but it, I mean, hitting the thumb, like, he's going to be fine next season. I thought, I actually consider Nick Kurtz at the 1-2 turn if it was very heavy hitters. And Nick Kurtz was my 17th hitter, actually, when I was doing it. So I was kind of like living on a prayer, as the song goes, to maybe get Nick Kurtz back in the third round. But then I remember going through my list. I was like, all right, if Kurtz is available, I can either get Rice, Alonso, or Olson in the third round. And all those guys went. Again, knowing Rice, Ben Rice is not catcher eligible next season, I didn't really care. Ben Rice went pick 8 in the third round to Jacob Halisker. And I thought that was a great pick. And yeah, I just thought those four bats, those four power first basemen in the third round, I feel like that price made sense. I could see Kurtz and Ben Rice going even earlier as we get further into draft season.
Yeah, I thought about taking Kurtz instead of Stewart. Rice, I was surprised he fell that far. I thought he was going to go, especially after Kurtz, like real quick after Kurtz, but. Yeah, it's a very interesting look seeing the board like this, kind of already seeing where the pockets of, you know, statistical and positional things come to meet. And first base is definitely one of those where you can wait. But and I like to see the push up for Matt Olson, who fell a lot this last draft season. And people, at least this room, was like, hey, dude plays like 160 games every year, hits 30 plus balls almost every year. Like, this dude is legit consistent. And will it end someday? Yes. But has it? No. So yeah, roll with it. So I like to see that as well.
And that was an interesting build. That was a Dan Kenyon pick. And again, we talked about Kenyon's team earlier in the pod, but that was 6 starters in the first 9 picks. Kenyon went Matt Olson, Dylan Dingler, Kyle Tucker, a lot of power up top, not a bunch of speed there, but then when he went back to hitting starting in the 10th round, it was Mikel Garcia, Daylen Lyle, one of the funnier pronunciations I've ever heard of Daylen Lyle through that one. And then Dylan Cruz. Like, so that's how he made up kind of the lack of taking bats in the first few rounds going so pitcher heavy.
All right. What do you got on second base for us?
Yeah, so second base was kind of crapped on at the beginning of the draft, and there were expletives thrown out during the Zoom about second base. But I just thought it was interesting that, so Fernando Tatis is second base eligible, even though he's colored green on this sheet here, when it went at pick 8. You like that, but then in the fourth round, there were 3 second basemen taken: Jazz Chisholm, Bryce Turang, and JJ Weatherholt. So for second base, like, that's actually pretty good in terms of, like, some talent near the top of the pool. And then you had Bryson Stott at the end of the 6th. Ketel Marte was the big faller, again, to Weimer, we talked about earlier, but that could that could prove to be pretty good. So second base looks pretty rough again, but there's at least some talent at the top, especially if you're going to use Tatis at second.
Yeah, that Bryce Tarang pick got me real good because
Jenny Butler pick.
I had that one queued up, ready to roll, and I was like, I don't want to take JJ Weatherhill yet, so I pivoted to Andy Páez. Talked about why earlier, but second base gets bad. It's really bad as things go along. Like, I was actually happy to get Ozzie Albies in round 12. Like, okay, I'll take that. I forgot. I was an idiot. Jackson Holliday was interesting, like three picks later, because I could see that being fun. But yeah, second base sucks. It has not gotten any better.
Because after Ketel Marte in the seventh, it was the end of the 10th round, the next second baseman, Brandon Lau, Nico Hoerner. Again, not dashing the picks, but like, you know, you're probably not too thrilled about those. Sure, where you take them, that's fine. No second baseman in the 11th, 12th round, Ozzie Albies, Jackson Holliday, Xavier Edwards. Like, Angel Hinao got taken in this draft. You know, it's second base is rough. Though you did get, is Geloff second base? Will he be?
He's three games away, so he's going to get it. Okay. That's kind of part of my Geloff plan. Yes. Yeah. He's going to be second base, third base, outfield, which in a DC is the chef's kiss. For me, it's MICA outfield. Like, we're sitting pretty there.
And Antonacci went in the 9th round. He will be second base eligible as well. So
very true. I did want to point out, like we talked about, you know, Connor Griffin and some of the other young studs, McGonagall, but I wanted to mention Max Clark went 11th pick, round 15, to Jimmy Butler. Fenancio took Angel Hinao at the 7th pick in round 15, and Jordan Lawler actually went with the first pick in round 15. So just kind of some random points of some of the young guys where they're going, and that'll continue to change this draft. I know I missed a couple more, but there's
Joshua Baez, I think, was the headliner of that one. Because you were, I remember we were texting during the draft, you were thinking of Joshua Baez. You were like, why hasn't Joshua Baez been taken? This was the 7th round. You ended up taking Bednar instead of Baez, but Dom Rello took Joshua Baez at the 7-8 turn. And who knows, right? But like, that's certainly the ceiling there at the 7-8. That makes a ton of sense.
Yes, that's why I was sitting on, man, he's out here. Like, we're talking about taking risks. Like, that seems like a risk worth taking right about then.
He probably would have taken him in the 8th coming back, right?
Oh, 100%.
I would imagine.
Yeah, because after Bednar took Liam Hicks, like, I would have punted catcher for that one. But the other name I wanted to mention, Bob Osgood at pick 7 in round 6 took Roman Anthony, a name to keep in mind. He's rehabbing now. We'll see where that goes. But that's a name that people were very, very excited for this season, and then injuries have obviously derailed that whole thing. So mid 6th round pick for Roman Anthony as well.
I'll throw out Wyatt Langford. Probably not the same exact bucket. Langford's got a little bit more experience, but Greg Martin took Wyatt Langford rather quickly in the early 6th round, and that got some applause in the Zoom room. Let's see if Langford can stay healthy, but that could certainly pay off quite well for Greg there.
Yeah. Anything else you want to discuss before we hit up listener questions? You were talking about players that weren't picked. I don't have a sheet for that. So if there's anybody that stood out to you, like, I can tell you names I had written down for my last picks. Like, there is Abby Ortiz still out there.
Yeah, sure.
Luis Arraez, Cody Clemens. Bubba Chandler's having a great second half, so he's an interesting pitching name if you want to keep believing in that hype. Those are a few names I had written down as something to keep an eye on.
In terms of, this is the old, like, Jeff Zimmerman. These are the highest kind of player rater year-to-date guys who were not picked. Mickey Moniak by dollars per game was the number 33 bat. I don't think he'll be in Coors next season, so it kind of makes sense that Moniak falls. But
they gave him more money, didn't they?
Did they re-sign Moniak?
Let me triple check before I speak completely out of turn. But I'm pretty positive. Yeah, he's a free agent 29. They gave him an extension.
Okay, I did. Apologies there. Teoscar Hernandez, my guy, was discussed.
Dude.
Jonathan Aranda, A-A-R-P. Kyle Stowers, ARP, Max Muncy. Those guys were not taken. Christian Yelich was not taken. Brandon Nimmo, Christian Walker. I know I'm going old. Sal Perez was not taken. Jose Altuve was not taken.
Bunch of olds.
Pitching side, some of the names, again, just near the top of my board of this. And then one of the reasons why, I don't really care if people know my rankings, because you're focusing on the wrong guy in this league. Bryce Miller, Emmett Sheehan, Kevin Gausman, Taj Bradley, Freddie Peralta, Jack Flaherty was not taken. Tanner Bibee was not taken. Foster the Griffin wasn't taken as well. Closer wise, pretty much all the closers were taken. Probably the top closer that still on my board would be like Emilio Pagan. He's got a player option for $10 million next season. So we'll see. Tanner Scott was not drafted for good reason. Devin Williams not drafted again for good reason. Pete Fairbanks not drafted. I could see that. Jacob Webb not drafted, but Daniel Palencia was. I understand that as well. Yoendris Gomez not drafted. Minnesota.
Gomez, I was thinking about late.
Yeah, I don't know. It's risky. Like, he's not that great of a pitcher. No, so Minnesota, you just wonder.
Yeah, they could be revolving door there for all we know.
Ryan Helsley not drafted. Cody Senga not drafted. I wasn't expecting those guys to be drafted, but just kind of all those names I'm throwing out there. Like, it's interesting as I have the second pick coming back. Like, I feel like I'm going to have, and with all the changes that happened over the last 6 weeks, like this 16th round's going to be. The restart's always a fascinating first round once we pick this back up.
Fully agree on that. It was a fun-filled night of drafting, but it's more entertaining after a long evening like this is watching me navigate the show questions on Discord.
Oh, good luck, man. Have you been in this thing yet?
I peeked at it.
It's a disaster.
They were all wanting to know your process behind drafting Walbert Urena. That didn't happen. Sean Chard was curious to see if the Meatballers pushed down starting pitching and closers even more this year than previous drafts after what happened this season. That did not happen. The opposite happened. That is for sure. SMMS said the best time of the year, it's like Christmas in July, except it's August and meatballs. That is correct. Matt Cardinal says, I wonder where this year's B&B legends go. Ildemaris did not get drafted. Wade Meckler did not get drafted. No. Bryce Elder, Junis, the Martian, Blade, Randy V, Toolman, Dominic. We'll find out in October where all of them were drafted.
The Bubba and the Bloom legends, like the good Lord was not drafted. We just like to pick on guys. Mookie Blaylock was not drafted. Vlade Divac was not drafted. To be expected.
SMMS did say, it's not a question, but he's curious to hear your thoughts about the impact you think the draft has on the ADP as a whole. I'm of the belief that this draft has a really powerful butterfly effect. You're literally setting the market, good and bad.
Yeah.
And no, like, people are so sharp these days. I've always had the philosophy, if you're drafting a DC in October, you're probably a degenerate that knows what you're doing. But it does have some impact, that's for sure.
I think it does. And probably, like, I know, like, boards come out of like super high dollar leagues like late in March, but like, this is probably if you think about it, the one draft that is discussed the most, but also like, it's such a standalone draft and it's so public. Like, we put the board out and we've been naming names, like, it's all public. This draft probably gets talked about more than any other draft. Would you disagree with that?
Oh no, it gets
like
talked about
single
every
draft
show.
Like, because you've got there's a ton of shows that talk about this, but like, this is also the only draft that kind of, I know there's some other kind of private draft and holds, I guess, that draft, but it's not as public as this. Like, this is kind of the one board that people have to look at, and the owners in this league, again, me and you excluded, are very, very sharp. Like, I don't want to say this draft moves markets, but like, I think a lot of people take note of who took who where in this, and it's got 2 months to kind of linger and fester. So it kind of does get, I don't want to say burned in your brain, but like, kind of get used to looking at this board and keeping it there.
No, you're not wrong. You're not wrong. I'm just curious to see where it goes once drafts go, and how long does this ADP actually still matter? I guess is where I'm going with that. But
it's more like, oh, yeah, James Anderson took Peyton Tolley in the fifth round. Oh, Phil DeSeau took Cade Anderson in the sixth round. Like,
it's never, oh, Bubba or Bloom.
It's never, no, it's never, oh, Bloomfield.
No, it is. Oh, UT Bubba took only. Junior Caminero in round at pick 10. What an idiot.
What a dumbass. Bloomfield God, took UT only Yandy idiot. Diaz. What an idiot. Yeah. That's our reaction to the damn thing. But
pretty much, yeah. We're just those dudes that we're good on the mic. Keegan says, is Tatis back to near first round pick now that the power seems to have returned? Yeah, shocker, he was. I was hoping to get him at pick 10.
That was the funny thing with not only did Tatis go 8, but you said you were going to take him. I know I was going to take him. And I think Jenny said she was going to take him. I know Dom was going to take him. So, yeah, he was not making it out of the first round.
Yep. So that's where that goes. And that's pretty much everything you need to know about the listener questions in the Discord. So, yeah, we'll wrap it up there unless you have anything else, my friend. It's been a long, long night, a fun night, a late night. Hope you guys enjoyed the stream. Ryan will post the board in the Discord and probably with the tweet for the show on Tuesday, I'm guessing. But any final thoughts?
On Wednesday. Yeah, we've been sitting in these chairs for 5 hours, so it's probably time to wrap it up.
It is time to wrap it up, but thank you all for listening. We'll be back Thursday night with your week 23 fab preview as the show goes on back to 2026 talk for you. But tons of 2027 look ahead. That was a blast with Meatball, and we'll keep things going throughout the offseason. It's a little tip of the iceberg of how we'll get the ball rolling for you all. And if you like that, join the Patreon, patreon.com/BubbaBloom. But until then, check out Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at BubbaBloomPod. And I am at BDentric. Until next time, Bubba the Bloom, episode 374. Catch y'all later.